It's the News at One on Radio One. This is Rachel English. Good afternoon. You're listening to an earlier than usual programme on this Easter Monday. We're with you to mark the death of Pope Francis, which was announced shortly before 9 o'clock this morning. That announcement came just hours after he appeared at the Vatican in St. Peter's Square for Easter Sunday. He also met the US Vice President, J.D. Vance. The Pope was 88 and had recently been discharged from hospital where he'd been treated for double pneumonia. His death was announced by senior Vatican official Cardinal Kevin Farrell.
Dear brothers and sisters, with deep sorrow I must announce the death of our Holy Father Francis. At 7:35 this morning, the Bishop of Rome, Francis, returned to the house of the Father. He taught us to live the values of the Gospel with fidelity, courage, and universal love, especially towards the poorest and most marginalised.
In the hours since that announcement, world leaders have paid tribute to the Pope's compassion and to his support for the poor and the marginalised. Jorge Maria Bergoglio, as he was then, was elected Pope 12 years ago, surprising many Vatican watchers who had viewed him as an outsider. He inherited a Catholic Church under attack over child sex abuse scandals and riven by Vatican infighting. Our religion and social affairs correspondent Alva Keneally looks back at his life.
Buonasera.
From the outset, he was Francis the Informal, asking those who cheered his election to bless him before he blessed them. Cardinal Jorge Bergoglio called himself after the radical Saint Francis, serving notice that reforms were in store. He rejected the traditional lavish papal apartment and appointed a council of 8 cardinals from around the globe to restructure the Vatican administration and tackle corruption. They began by closing questionable accounts in the Vatican Bank. He broke new ground by establishing a commission on child protection, which included survivor advocates like the Irish woman Mary Collins. He horrified traditionalists by washing the feet of women and Muslims during his first Holy Week ceremony as Pope. And on his first trip outside of Rome, he visited Lampedusa as the migrant crisis swept the Mediterranean. On another journey, he asked rhetorically, if a person is gay and seeks God and has good will, who am I to judge him? He underlined that the Church cannot insist only on issues relating to abortion, gay marriage and artificial contraception, which he said conservative critics wanted him to mention much more often. But a draft Bishop's Synod document proposing greater acceptance of the LGBT community provoked a row, circulating unprecedented questionnaires on the family to Catholics. Before listening to Vatican debates on the issue, he then lowered bureaucratic hurdles facing couples seeking church annulments. Many highlighted his closeness to the poor, whether in developed countries, in the Third World, or where the two meet, for example, in refugee camps in Greece. His appointments of bishops and cardinals have favoured both developing nations and newer perspectives, promoting many people from the margins, despite the tightly regimented hierarchy handed down to him by his predecessors. His teaching document on the environment influenced the World Climate Summit in Paris, especially when he warned that the globe is coming to resemble a rubbish heap. He visited Ireland in the summer of 2018 as part of the World Meeting of Families, where he was confronted with the controversy surrounding mother and baby homes in Ireland. He said he hoped his visit here would help grow unity and reconciliation among Christians on the island of Ireland. During a mass in the Phoenix Park, he asked for forgiveness. 2 years later, as the world grappled with the impact of COVID-19, places of worship worldwide were forced to close, including Catholic churches. Pope Francis used the global pandemic to reiterate the central message of his papacy, calling for an end to the pandemic of poverty worldwide. Non ci sia un'alternativa alla loro interrogazione. He announced a synod on synodality in the Catholic Church, a unique bottom-up listening approach, offering Catholics in every diocese in the world a say in the nature and future of their church. In March 2021, at the age of 84, the pontiff made an unprecedented visit to Iraq under tight security. The trip sought to offer hope to Iraq's minority Christian community, devastated by wars and repression by Islamic State insurgents. In one of the most significant moments of the trip, Pope Francis met Iraq's Shia leader, the Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani. In 2022, Francis visited Canada, where he apologised to Indigenous communities for abuse they suffered at residential Catholic schools, which were in existence there from the late 1800s to the 1990s. He used a wheelchair due to strained knee ligaments, and he acknowledged that his week-long Canadian pilgrimage was a test that showed he needed to slow down and one day possibly retire. The Pope's predecessor, Emeritus Pope Benedict, opened a path to resignation and remained on Vatican grounds until he passed away on New Year's Eve in 2022. Pope Francis found himself in the position of presiding over the funeral of his predecessor in a unique ceremony which was carefully choreographed by the Vatican. In his efforts to reform the social and economic policies of the Vatican, Pope Francis had his critics, but he was greatly admired by people of all faiths worldwide. A man of the people, he'll be remembered for his compassion, his courage, and above all, his humility.
Our correspondent Alva Keneally, looking back at the papacy of Pope Francis. Joining us now is the Archbishop of Dublin, Dermot Farrell. Archbishop, thank you very much for talking to us this afternoon on what is a sad day for many people and also a busy day for many people within the Catholic Church. What are your thoughts this afternoon?
My thoughts, first of all, are for Pope Francis, who has now gone to the Lord, and thanking God for his ministry since his election in 2013. He's brought a great energy and vitality to the church throughout that ministry, right up until yesterday when he appeared on the balcony of St. Peter's to wish all of the pilgrims who would travel to Rome a Buona Pasqua, as he said, a very happy and joyous Easter. He literally, a man who died with his boots on. So we thank God today, you know, even though it's a sad day for Catholics throughout the world, we thank God for the ministry and for the life and the vitality that he brought to the church over the last 12 years.
How did his personal qualities, and we heard Alva talking about them there, his humility, his compassion for the poor and for refugees, how did those influence his papacy, do you think?
I think they greatly influenced his papacy. Right from the very first moment of his election, it was very evident that things were going to be very different. And he had that, what I would describe, I think, as a freshness that he brought to the papacy. But he also had a very radical freedom to do things that his predecessors hadn't done. You know, I'm not too sure that any of us, if we had ended up in that particular ministry, would have been able to, you know, put off all of the things like going to live in the Santa Marta, not using all of the, following, I suppose, all of the protocols that have been followed for centuries. He had that freedom to be able to come at that in a very fresh way and in his own way. And he had a great humanity. You know, once you met Pope Francis, when he was talking to you, he was really talking to you, even though there might be thousands of other people around. He could focus on the individual. He came very much to life when he met people and met individuals. And I think, you know, I experienced that personally on the few occasions that I met him, but also just watching him when he was dealing with, you know, talking to other people. And that freedom as well allowed him to have that, I suppose, humility and the simplicity that he had in his life, you know, wearing simple vestments, going around in a simple car, paying his own bills. That's a freshness that he brought to the papacy.
He visited Ireland, as we know, at a very difficult time for the Catholic Church following a string of scandals about child abuse, yes, and also over how people were treated in religious-run institutions. How did that shape his visit, do you think?
Well, in the end, I'd say it did shape his visit, but, you know, being the man he is, the first thing he did was to, you know, apologise, and he wrote his own little introduction to the Mass in the Phoenix Park, which was the penitential rite, and, you know, that was the mark of the man. you know, when you think about him, I suppose he made mistakes in his own life. He would admit he was probably a little bit harsh, I think, as probably he would say himself when he was superior general of the Jesuits in Argentina. But he learned from that. And that brought, you know, that forgiveness was very important in his life. Humility, looking out for the poor, looking out for those who were disadvantaged, who had sometimes a very hard life. And he had a great empathy and sympathy with people like that found themselves in these harsh and difficult situations. And that certainly shaped his life and shaped his ministry as the Holy Father.
Archbishop of Dublin, Dermot Farrell, thank you very much for talking to us on the programme this afternoon. The bells rang in St. Peter's Square to announce the death of Pope Francis, and a crowd of many thousands of people fell silent. These visitors gave their thoughts on the Pope's passing.
To be honest, I had to take a minute. It was quite emotional because I really liked him as a Pope personally. He had a genuine care for the poor. It was refreshing to see a man of his authority showing such care for the environment and for the poor. The very fact that he abandoned luxuries given to popes for like a more simpler lifestyle, it said a lot about who he was as a person.
To be honest, we are all really shocked, but we are all really grateful for being here and see what's going on. But also to show the world that we are here, even though he's not here, he's with God. So I know he's looking at us from the sky, from heaven. I'm sure he's very proud of us.
Some views from St. Peter's Square. Let's go live to Rome next and to Elise Ann Allen, senior correspondent with Crux, the independent commentator on the Vatican and the Catholic Church. Elise, thanks very much for being with us. Given that Pope Francis was seen just yesterday, is there a degree of shock at his death?
Well, good morning. You know, I think the answer to that is there is shock, but not surprise. You know, Pope Francis, obviously, having come out of, a nearly 40-day hospital stay just a month ago, was still very frail. And, you know, he's still very weak. You could hear his voice was still very weak and raspy when he spoke. So he's obviously still a sick man, but had been doing better, right? And we had been registering, you know, slight improvements in his condition over, you know, the past few weeks. And seeing him out in the square, you know, yesterday on Easter, almost triumphantly, you know, making it to that point, you know, the most sacred day on the church's calendar, was something that was very special for many Catholics, I think. And I think news of his passing this morning was not expected, given, you know, the fact that he'd come out yesterday, and this was the longest period he'd been out since coming out of the hospital. His first time going out amongst the people in the Pope Mobile to go out into crowds like that, which is something doctors, of course, had advised against, you know, but Pope Francis really wanted to be with the people, especially, you know, at such a sacred time of the year. I think it was a shock for people this morning, but not entirely a surprise given the ordeal he's been through recently and how frail he still was towards the end.
It's what, almost 4 hours now since his death was announced. Can you bring us through what's been happening since then?
Well, I think once people started to absorb the news, you know, crowds, of course, started to flock to St. Peter's. People are there just to pray, to be in the vicinity of the Vatican. You know, there was a rosary being led for Pope Francis that happened at noon local time in the square. So many people came and participated in that. Not much else is happening at this point. You know, it's a period of mourning. The church has entered into a period of several days, a 9-day period of mourning. And we're going to get more details on what comes next, you know, in the coming hours and days. You know, at this evening at 8:00 local time, there will be an official rite, you know, where his death certificate is written and he is placed in his coffin. And in the coming days, there will be, you know, he will lay in state. There will be an opportunity for faithful and, you know, heads of state, whoever wants to come and pay their final respects can do that ahead of his funeral. And we're waiting for some of the details of when that's going to happen. But right now, people are still absorbing the news. They're praying and they're mourning.
He had a different style to many of his predecessors, and that's likely to be reflected in his funeral.
Yes, it is. You know, Francis has wanted a simplified, he's a pope of simplicity in many ways. You know, he wanted a simplified rite. You know, his funeral mass, we can expect, you know, to be a full mass for a pope, but perhaps, you know, simpler in some ways, you know, and, you know, of course, the biggest thing that's different is where he has chosen to be buried. You know, most popes in recent history have been buried, of course, in the grotto beneath St. Peter's Basilica. He is the first pope in I think, a couple of hundred years to be buried outside of the Vatican. He has chosen to be buried in the Papal Basilica of St. Mary Major here in Rome. It was his favorite basilica. He went before and after every international trip, and he, of course, went just recently, less than a week ago, to go pray to Our Lady, you know, before Easter and after his hospitalization. So it's a very special place for Pope Francis, and I think that's the biggest difference and you know, in that we can expect in terms of, you know, funeral happenings for Pope, you know, is that he's going to be in a much different place than any of his recent predecessors, you know. And that also is a sign of him just not doing things the way they've always been done. Francis has been somebody that shook up the system from the very beginning, and he's doing the very same thing in his death.
Elise Ann Allen, thank you very much indeed for joining us from Rome this afternoon. Well, we can get some reaction from home now. Parishioners outside Galway Cathedral and also outside the cathedral in Armagh spoke this morning of their sadness at hearing the news.
Despite the fact that we knew that he'd been ill for some time, you're never prepared for these moments, even though it was probably anticipated and he made such a remarkable recovery. But what's so beautiful about it is that he gave his blessing yesterday, and I was so blessed to watch that on the screen and to get his last blessing, my son and I feel so touched about that, that he left with an Easter blessing and then a resurrection. What a moment that God chose for him to pass.
A life well lived, actually, and a great impact on humanity, right? Those are my thoughts. Yeah, so.
He looked all right when he saw him last on the telly, you know. God rest his soul. He was a good pope.
Oh, it's just sad news to hear it first thing this morning when I woke up. It was sad to hear it. Well, I would always have considered him a good and passionate person towards, especially towards the underprivileged and the poor, and also different, you know, he had a great outlook, I think, on the church.
We didn't expect it, really, you know, considering that he was out and about on at Easter, you know. It's so sad, it's such a shock.
What did he mean to you?
Everything. Of course, yeah. Of course, he was such a lovely man. Humble. Oh, humble, so humble from his background, you know.
I suppose we got a shock when we heard it this morning, because we had seen him on TV and social media yesterday out and about and meeting the people. And he seemed so determined, I'd say, to get home from hospital, be amongst his people and go at the time that he felt was right for him. That's just, we feel sad. We've signed the book of condolence inside the cathedral. There's a calmness or something in there, isn't there?
There is, yeah. So we're sorry to hear about the Pope passing away. He was a very humble man. That was his strength, was his humility, really. You know, that's what I felt about the man, yeah. So he'll be a loss to the Catholic Church and to the people of the world.
Some reaction there from outside the cathedrals in Galway and Armagh on this Easter Monday. Let's talk next to the Taoiseach and Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Harris. Taoiseach, what are your thoughts today on the death of Pope Francis?
Well, good afternoon, Rachel. I think it's really a fact that the world has lost such a powerful force for good. Catholics right across Ireland and across the world have lost a compassionate leader of our church. But even beyond that, more broadly, the world has lost an incredibly decent, humble man who challenged all of us to do better and to be better every day. And just listening to parishioners there in Galway and Armagh, I mean, they're so correct. This has come as a shock, because even though we all knew the Pope was so ill, I think so many of us were heartened to hear his words yesterday, his Easter blessing. And there's something very poignant about a Pope giving an Easter blessing on Easter Sunday and indeed returning to the house of the Lord on Easter Monday. So we're all in mourning today. And on behalf of many people right across the country, we send our condolences to all in the Vatican and indeed to all Catholics right across the world. I think when Pope Francis chose the name Francis, it really told us a lot about what his papacy was going to be about, choosing the name of a saint who lived in such a frugal way, in such a humble way. And really, that's what Pope Francis embodied in everything he did.
He visited Ireland, as we know, in 2018, and there was considerable focus at that time on the legacy of clerical abuse. He asked for forgiveness. He also met a number of survivors. How significant was that visit, do you think?
Oh, I remember that visit very well. I was Minister for Health, and I remember at the time talking about how the visit needed to be one that tried to bring about healing. Pope Francis was the second only serving pope to ever set foot on Irish soil. And of course, he did so against a backdrop of around two decades worth of reports into clerical abuse and the deep, deep pain, hurt, mistrust, broken trust that had brought about for so many. And I think the Pope came very clearly wanting to bring healing, wanting to play his part in the journey that is healing. And I was very struck when I sat in Dublin Castle and listened to his words. He clearly wanted his visit to make an impact for good. I think the fact that, yes, he did the things that dignitaries do when they come in terms of meeting various officials, but the fact that he chose to spend time directly with victims of clerical abuse, being in their presence and him in their presence, listening to them directly in terms of the impact of clerical abuse, was a very powerful moment. And then, of course, his words in the Phoenix Park, where he asked for forgiveness, expressed deep sorrow and a deep apology on behalf of the church, I think was a powerful and important moment, and I think has contributed positively to what is an ongoing journey in terms of needing to heal and reconcile.
Tánaiste, Simon Harris, thank you for being with us on the programme. Well, also joining us now is Ursula Halligan, who's a member of We Are Church Ireland. That's a group that works for change and renewal in the Catholic Church. Ursula, thanks for being with us. What's your reaction to today's news?
Well, I immediately felt sad on hearing the news. I believe Pope Francis was at heart a good man, a well-meaning man, perhaps even a holy man in the sense of someone being close to God. Of course, I didn't agree with him on many things, especially on his failure to address the inequality of women in the church. In my view, that was his great big blind spot. But I would like to start by acknowledging the good that he did. I will always be grateful to him for his attempts to revive the reforms of Vatican II through synodality. As a gay woman who worked with We Are Church Ireland for gospel justice and equality in our church, I never thought I'd see the day when the hierarchical church in Ireland would consult me on the future of our church, never mind nominate me as one of their delegates to attend a national and an international synodal assembly. But they did. And it was Pope Francis who made that dialogue possible. I believe he also changed the tone of the institutional church by emphasising core gospel values of love, compassion and mercy, and he put them at the centre of church teaching. And that confused a lot of people, and that it was inevitable that that would happen. Of course, he often infuriated me too with some of the contradictory things he'd say, especially on women and gay people. But overall, I am grateful, deeply grateful for the strong moral voice he contributed to the world, always on the side of immigrants, the poor and the marginalised. And I am conscious that there are very few other voices like his now in the world. And given the way the world is right now at the moment, I feel his loss even more profoundly because of that.
What do you think his legacy will be, and what do you think are the big challenges facing his successor?
Well, I think his legacy is synodality. I think his legacy is the way he changed the tone of the institutional church. What I just said, he emphasised the core gospel values of love, compassion and mercy. And that was no small thing to do, given where the church was coming from. A lot of people saw the Catholic Church as authoritarian, as dogmatic, as unfeeling, as even cruel. And he went a fair distance in bringing back the core values of the gospel, and in starting the synodal process. So that's his legacy. But I hope that the challenge for his successor will be to continue that. Because Pope Francis made it quite clear that that's the future of the church as he envisaged it. And he made plans. I cannot believe he was so ill. And he came out of the hospital, went back into the Vatican, where he knew he must have been going to die. And he still made plans to continue with synodality. And he made plans that a synodal assembly would go ahead in, I think, 2028. So he was still working hard on that, because he knew that that is the future for the church, that the church is all of us. It's not, as it has been identified, with a building, with a hierarchy. It is all the people working together, sitting down, talking to one another, trying to overcome our differences. And if we can do that as a church, then we are being the church. So it's our understanding of church, too. A lot of people have an outdated view of what church is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a sign of God's love in the world. So that makes it obligatory on each one of us to play our part, to do that, to contribute positively to building up the church for all of us, so that it is a sign of God's love in the world. And that is a really formidable task to do.
Ursula, thank you very much indeed for talking to us this afternoon. Ursula Halligan there, who's a member of We Are Church Ireland. We'll be back with more on this extended News at One after a short break. Hello again. If you're just joining us, you're with a slightly longer than usual News at One. We've been on air since 12:30 following the announcement of the death of Pope Francis. And that is the main headline this lunchtime. The Pope died at his Vatican residence following a period of illness. He was 88. Leaders in Ireland and around the world have been paying tribute to a man of profound faith, humility, and an advocate for the poorest and most marginalised. The news is read today by Emma Cunahan.
Pope Francis has died at the age of 88. The Vatican announced the Pope's death at his residence there this morning. He had been battling grave ill health and was seen only yesterday appearing in St. Peter's Square to wish thousands of worshippers a happy Easter. The Pope was born Jorge Mario Bergoglio in Argentina and became a Jesuit. He was later elected the first Pope from Latin America in 2013. Dimitri O'Donnell reports.
The pontiff passed away shortly after 7:30 Roman time, 6:30 here in Ireland. On behalf of the Vatican, the Irish-born Camerlengo of the Apostolic Chamber, Kevin Farrell, announced that the Pope had returned to the House of the Father. Cardinal Farrell said the pontiff's entire life was dedicated to the service of the Lord and of his church, and that he taught Catholics to live the values of the gospel with fidelity, courage and universal love, especially in favour of the poorest and most marginalised. Francis was 88 and had been seriously ill in recent months with pneumonia. After 38 days in hospital, the late Pope returned to his Vatican residence to continue his recovery. Just yesterday, Francis made a brief public appearance in St. Peter's Square to mark Easter Sunday. The Vatican's Master of Apostolic Ceremonies, Diego Ravelli, said that the late Pope requested that the funeral rites be simplified with a focus on expressing the faith of the Church in the risen body of Christ. The Vatican said Pope Francis's body will be laid in a coffin in the chapel at the St. Martha residence where he lived at 8 p.m. local time.
President Michael D. Higgins has led Irish tributes to Pope Francis, saying there was a warmth to the Pope who brought a unique humility to the role. The president said he sought to show in the most striking and moving of ways the extraordinary importance of the spiritual as a powerful source of global ethics in the challenges of contemporary life. He added that Pope Francis was vocal on the vital issues of our time, including global hunger, poverty, climate change and justice. The Taoiseach Micheál Martin praised a long and distinguished papacy, which he said was marked by the Pope's unwavering commitment to the principles of compassion, peace and human dignity. Many of the Church's leaders have also been reacting on this programme. The Catholic Archbishop of Dublin, Dermot Farrell, spoke of the Pope's deep sense of humanity and the personal touch he possessed.
Once you met Pope Francis, when he was talking to you, he was really talking to you, even though there might be thousands of other people around. He could focus on the individual. He came very much to life when he met people and met individuals. And I think, you know, I experienced that personally on the few occasions that I met him, but also just watching him when he was dealing with, you know, talking to other people.
Leaders from across the world have been reacting to the Pope's death, praising his efforts to reform the worldwide church and offering condolences to the world's 1.4 billion Catholics. Spain, a devoutly Catholic country, has declared 3 days of mourning. With more on the international reaction, Kate Varley of our foreign staff.
In this time of war and brutality, he had a sense for the other, for the most fragile. That was how French President Emmanuel Macron this morning described Pope Francis, saying he always sided with the most vulnerable, and that he did with a lot of humility. Italy's Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, who visited the Pope while he was hospitalised in February, praised him as a great man and a great pastor. Also paying tribute was US Vice President J.D. Vance, who briefly met the pontiff in Rome yesterday. He posted on social media that he was happy to see him, though he was obviously very ill. In his native Argentina, people have been waking up to the news of the Pope's death, with President Javier Milei posting, "Despite differences that seem minor today, having been able to know him in his goodness and wisdom was a true honour."
In other news, a church building has been destroyed by a fire overnight in Gwydor in County Donegal. Chuck Poblawera and Derry Bioga, a Catholic church in the Diocese of Raphoe, was totally destroyed in the fire, which was first reported at 4 a.m. Our northern correspondent, Conor McCauley.
The church at Nadhira Bioga is a burnt-out shell. The roof is completely burned off. Only the walls are standing. The fire service got the call around 4 a.m. By the time they got here, the building could not be saved. Parish priest Antar Brian O'Farry visited the scene early this morning and was visibly moved by what he witnessed. He said the church had been a focal point for the community and words could not adequately express their loss. Five units of the fire brigade attended and many remain at the scene. Approach roads to Chap Poblawera are closed while the investigation into the cause of the overnight blaze continues. Conor McCauley, RT News, Nadhira Bioga.
And now the weather.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Grant. From HVO biofuel compatible condensing boilers to heat pumps and underfloor heating. Trust Grant to heat your home. Visit grant.ie.
Sunshine and showers extending across the country this afternoon. Some of the showers heavy. The chance of an isolated thunderstorm. Highs temperatures of 11 to 14 degrees.
Emma, thank you very much. And we're going to continue our coverage of the death of Pope Francis, which was announced this morning. It was marked by the tolling of the bells in St. Peter's Square. Solemn scenes in St. Peter's Square this morning. We can talk next to Michael Kelly, who's the former editor of the Irish Catholic. Michael, before we talk about what's been happening today, will you take us back to the late Pope's earliest days in Argentina? Because his story is a fascinating one. His family left Italy to escape fascism.
Yeah, perhaps this is one of the reasons why Pope Francis has always had a special affection for migrants and those who are seeking protection. That's his own background, very much poor Italian immigrants who, like many others, they fled to Buenos Aires. And, you know, Buenos Aires is to this day is a gritty sort of city. And it's in that environment that Pope Francis grew up. We know as a young man, you know, he played football on the streets. He was very, very comfortable in the streets, and I think that's something that he brought to his later ministry. Just about a year ago, I actually was in Buenos Aires, and it was interesting to me that in the posh suburbs, you know, people had really very little recollection of Pope Francis, but it was only when you went to the slums, when you went really to these desperate places, that everyone had a story to tell about who they called Padre Jorge, you know, whether he had baptized a grandchild of theirs, whether he had married a young couple. And I mean, that background was something that he brought to the papacy. Perhaps in the past, we were used to popes who came quite often from noble backgrounds. Pope Francis was someone, you know, who was a young man who had worked as a doorman on a tango club in Buenos Aires.
Why did he choose the Jesuits, Michael?
I think the Jesuits were something that interested him because he liked the idea of discernment, liked this idea of trying to really get to the heart of what God is saying in a particular situation, whether that is the slums of Buenos Aires or the halls of the Vatican. This is something that really appealed to him, that idea that, you know, God's voice, God's will can be discerned. And that's something that the Jesuits, under the inspiration of their founder, St. Ignatius of Loyola, have always prioritized. And I think that's why he has brought to the papacy this idea of synodality as well, this idea of, you know, people taking co-responsibility for the church, lay people, priests, religious, bishops, all trying to discern together what the best pathway forward for the church is, while retaining core church teachings. Because one of the misconceptions about Pope Francis, really, I think, is that, you know, he was a liberal intent on, you know, radically reforming church teaching. It doesn't matter how many interviews he gave emphasizing that he wasn't, and underlining the fact, you know, that he wasn't in favor of women priests, or he wasn't in favor of changing the church's teaching on a whole range of issues. People still found in the openness, they felt that it was some kind of coded message that he really did want to change all these things, even though he himself constantly protested that he didn't.
One recent aspect of his papacy that struck many people, younger people I think in particular, was his support for the people of Gaza, and in particular the small number of Catholics there. He rang them every night.
Yeah, Pope Francis really had a pastoral heart, and in some ways he saw himself as the parish priest of the world. I know the parish priest there in Gaza, Father Romanelli, and you know, I know the great consolation that it brought to the people there. I mean, there's only about 400 Christians left in Gaza, and to call them every evening, and you know, people used to know this would happen every evening at 8 o'clock, and sometimes even Muslim neighbors would come in and they'd be present for the phone call, and sometimes the phone call would only be a minute and a half, just literally checking in. It's not that the Pope had a profound message for them every evening, but the profundity of the message was in his closeness to them, that in his room in the Vatican in Rome, he was ringing there, that every evening he was thinking about the people of Gaza. And I think that in recent years, the Pope has been greatly troubled by the state of the world, by the war in Ukraine, by everything that's happening in the Holy Land, in Lebanon and Syria and Yemen, Sudan, all the other various places. And I think in a way it's quite fitting that his last message to the world was that Urbi et Orbi Easter message yesterday, when he had those passionate pleas for peace and also pleas on behalf of the marginalized. Francis always criticized, and he did so yesterday again, what he describes as our throwaway culture. And in that he includes, you know, the elderly, the sick, the disabled, the unborn, prisoners, refugees, poor people. He always saw that as one piece. He always felt you can't be concerned just about one group of marginalized people. You have to see all of the marginalized people as one. And, you know, I've traveled a lot in the world to, you know, various trouble spots and various difficult parts of the world, most recently to Pakistan in my work with Aid to the Church in Need. And there, poor people, they get Pope Francis. Perhaps they understood him and they loved him, perhaps in a way that the Western world felt a bit jaded by religion. These were people who knew that this was a man who was on their side. And, you know, he really walked the walk on humility. I mean, it was a lot more than just kind of pious messaging from him.
Michael, thank you very much indeed for now. Michael Kelly there, former editor of the Irish Catholic. We'll have more in just a few moments. But first of all, we're going to take a short break. You're welcome back to the News at One. In the past few minutes, the Primate of All Ireland, Archbishop Eamon Martin, has been paying tribute to Pope Francis. Let's hear a little of what he's been saying.
He had a very special place in his heart for the poor and for those who were on the peripheries and those who are suffering most, both locally and globally. And I think he showed that by his words, but also by his actions. He wanted to be with people, to encounter them, to look into their faces. He wanted to touch them and embrace them. And we saw this constantly in his closeness to people in St. Peter's Square and indeed everywhere he went. He also was very strong about any assault on human life or on the dignity of the human person. And I think those bold gestures of his, even on Thursday, He went to a prison to be with people in prison, the marginalised, that we tend, I suppose most of us tend to forget. And he showed that great empathy also with migrants, with prisoners. And as we know also, he tended to shun a lot of the traditional privileges and accoutrements of the papacy.
Eamon Martin speaking in Armagh this lunchtime. We can go back next to Rome, from where we're joined by the theologian and Jesuit priest, Father Jim Corkery. Thanks so much for talking to us on the programme today. It's a sad day for many people. What's the reaction been in Rome and among your own community?
I'll start with my own community. Sadness. Surprise, of course, because it came suddenly in the end, but great sadness because we lived enjoying the ministry and life of this Jesuit Pope with his surprises and with his relentless pursuit of justice for the poor. So sadness. On the streets, I live in the historical centre of Rome, so I'm not near the Vatican. I'm about a half an hour's walk from it. But they tell me people are already stopping by churches, praying for him in small groups, like they did when he was sick in the Gemelli Clinic. So the same thing is happening, that people of very different kinds are taking a moment of silence for Pope Francis. When he passed on his way back from the hospital through the Piazza Venezia nearby here, very busy, it was incredible. When people knew that the car was coming, the crowd hushed to a silence. So he's in people's hearts.
Yeah, he was the first Jesuit Pope. What was the significance of that, and how much did that matter to the community?
Well, it mattered. It mattered a lot, of course, to the community, because I suppose I could say this to you. I had studied the works of his predecessor quite well and knew them and understood them because I read them. But the minute this Pope started to act, I understood him because he was a Jesuit. I knew the motivations out of which he was working. Jesuits like to say we can find God in all things, not just the clean and manicured places, but everywhere. And Francis clearly showed that. He went to margins and peripheries. He also spoke as somebody close to the people. And he had lived a life very close to people in Buenos Aires. So when he asked people at the beginning of the papacy to pray for them, Jesuits felt at home with this kind of person because he has the same spiritual tradition, kind of Bible in one hand, newspaper in the other, a pendulum between prayer and action, with many human interests like music, cinema, literature, football. We could identify with all that.
Well, listen, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to talk to us. That was Jim Corkery, Father Jim Corkery, who's a theologian and Jesuit priest based in Rome. Well, we're going to hear some more next about the visit of Pope Francis to Ireland, something we touched on earlier. Not since Pope John Paul II famously kissed the tarmac at Dublin Airport back in 1979 had the leader of the Catholic Church paid a visit here. However, in 2018, Pope Francis arrived to a very different Ireland, both culturally and economically. And the tone for the Pope's visit was set before he even stepped off the plane, when 5 days before his arrival on Irish soil, he published a 2,000-word letter to members of the Catholic Church, addressing its previous failures to deal with clerical sex abuse and its cover-up. Our correspondent Mark O'Driscoll has been taking a look back at that visit by Pope Francis to Ireland.
As Pope Francis's plane, Shepherd 1, touched down at Dublin Airport on the morning of Saturday, the 25th of August 2018, it marked the first visit by a reigning pontiff to Ireland in almost 40 years. However, it was not the first time Pope Francis had landed on these shores. Father Jorge Bergoglio, as he was then known, had come to study English in Dublin in 1980. His trip here as Pope came some 38 years later, when he was aged 81, and it followed an invitation to attend the World Meeting of Families in Dublin. Pope Francis's first stop here was Áras an Uachtaráin for a private meeting with President Michael D. Higgins. before then travelling to Dublin Castle, where he received a warm welcome by then Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, who went on to speak about a shared history of sorrow and shame.
Magdalen laundries, mother and baby homes, industrial schools, illegal adoptions and clerical child abuse are stains on our state, our society and also the church.
Pope Francis addressed the church's handling of clerical child sex abuse in his response.
The failure of ecclesiastical authorities, bishops, religious superiors, priests and others adequately to address these repellent crimes has rightly given rise to outrage and remain a source of pain and shame for the Catholic community.
Clerical child sex abuse was an issue which would be a reoccurring theme on his two-day visit. There were protests.
We're here to remind Pope Francis that the global crisis of child abuse is still a global crisis.
I am an advocate for mental health care, and I will ask and fight for the church to provide that for all people suffering from abuse.
But there were also scenes of joy as thousands lined the streets to see the pontiff in his Pope Mobile.
Hallelujah, hallelujah, we're going to see the Pope.
So we just took our hands, said a prayer, and I just there crying with my nerves and everything. It was just amazing, amazing. Yeah, wasn't it?
I was crying, I was starstruck.
So we grabbed Rocco with his both hands by the face and kissed him on the forehead.
And what does that mean to you?
Everything. Because when Rocco was so sick, that's all we kind of had was faith. So for the Pope, the actual Pope, to kiss Rocco was like amazing.
Day one concluded with the Festival of Families gathering at Croke Park. Described as a musical celebration of family, the pontiff was treated to a special performance of Riverdance. The second day of his visit saw Pope Francis arrive at a wet and windy Ireland West airport. The weather wasn't kind, but it didn't stop around 45,000 people gathering at Knock Shrine to see the Bishop of Rome.
Good morning.
None of us can fail to be moved by the stories of young people who suffered abuse, were robbed of their innocence, and left scarred.
One last task for the pontiff before boarding his flight back to Dublin that Sunday morning: to sign a Mayo football jersey. A papal endorsement, still not enough to break the curse in the intervening years, however. Back in the capital, the Pope's final public engagement was in Phoenix Park to celebrate a papal mass. 500,000 tickets had been circulated in advance, but far fewer turned up on the day.
Por los abusos en Irlanda.
We ask forgiveness for the abuses in Ireland. Abuses of power and conscience, sexual abuses on the part of qualified members of the church.
It was a short trip all in all. The Pope was in Ireland for just 32 hours and after a final meeting with Irish bishops, he climbed the steps to board the Aer Lingus plane home. The theme of forgiveness had touched every one of his events over that whirlwind weekend in Ireland for Pope Francis in August 2018.
Mark O'Driscoll reporting there. A key part of Pope Francis' visit to Ireland in 2018 was his visit to Knock Shrine in County Mayo. In 2021, he also elevated Knock to an international sanctuary of special Eucharistic and Marian devotion. Father Richard Gibbons, who's the parish priest and rector of Knock, joins us now on the line. Thanks for talking to us this afternoon. Will you take us back to that visit in 2018 when the Pope sat in silent prayer in the apparition chapel? How much did that mean at the time?
That was an extraordinary moment, the moment of silent prayer. When he arrived in Knock, even though the weather wasn't kind to us, it didn't dampen spirits and it certainly didn't dampen the enjoyment of Pope Francis himself. He was in wonderful form. We engaged in a little bit of conversation. I asked him whether he was at Knock before. He said no, and then he proceeded into the apparition chapel where that moment of silent prayer took place. A bell sounded, And you could, as they say here, a pin drop. It became 45,000 people became very still, very quiet. And it was a unique and special moment that everybody commented on afterwards. I suppose he just took in the aspect of the apparition itself, the tableau that's there that represents the apparition of 1879. And it's quite a complex apparition. It's quite a complex tableau, but it has all the very important elements of our faith constituted within it. And I think that spoke an awful lot to him. Afterwards, then, he proceeded outside to speak to the people. And just a personal moment, he came and my mother was there. She was had ill health and she was in a wheelchair. And he just said, asked me what was wrong with my mother and then how old she was. And she was in her mid-70s at the time. And he said, too young to have that those ailments. And, you know, it was just a very, it was a lovely personal moment. And I suppose we went out then and was greeted by the people. And it was a short visit to the shrine, but extremely important for us and extremely important for him because he has wonderful, he had wonderful Marian devotion, like his favorite church, of course, in Rome, Santa Maria Maggiore. And always went there before he went on a visit and after he came back from a visit. So Mary was extremely important to him. And then the elevation of the mm-hmm. shrine to international status was extraordinary too.
What did that mean for you? Can you explain that for us?
Yeah, well, very simply, and I know it was referenced there by signing the jersey for Mayo, it was like winning the All-Ireland, but on an international scale. So it was it's the ultimate recognition of a shrine. So it means that the church itself accepts and acknowledges the veracity of the apparition of 1879 and that it is a fully authenticated apparitional site for people, pilgrims, to visit. So it's a unique status and one that meant a huge amount to us, an enormous boost to the shrine itself, and a great recognition of the shrine, indeed, that means so much to Irish people and indeed Irish people living abroad too. Mm. So the shrine itself, you know, we have over 1 million people a year visit Knock. Many people don't realize that, but we do. It's one of the biggest sites on the island to visit. So, but it's at the heart and core of our faith, and that status kind of means that we can grow and we can develop in terms of pastoral activity at the shrine.
Well, listen, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to talk to us this afternoon. That was Father Richard Gibbons there joining us from Knock. And that's just about it from us this lunchtime. We had Liam Mullen on sound today. Our broadcast coordinator was Jim O'Donoghue-Martin. And the editor of the News at One was Laura Whelan. Now, there'll be further coverage of the death of Pope Francis later on in the day when Drive Time comes on air at the earlier time of 4 o'clock. In the meantime, stay tuned for Life on the Wards. That's a new programme for Radio 1. But from all of us here on the News at 1, thanks for listening.